Hello, your friendly neighborhood host, JT Wheatley here again, back for another episode of the History of Comics podcast, this time with the third and final part of the history of American female cartoonists. When we last left off, we had leaped from comic strips to comic books, and now we're about to dive into the life of one of the most important American female cartoonists. Marie Severin was born on August 21st, 1929. Growing up in an artistic household, her father worked as a fashion designer. She would take a few drawing lessons in her teens and even attended the Pratt Institute for one day before deciding to just go straight to work and make money. Marie would go to work for EC Comics with her brother John, who got work for her in 1953. Severin started out as a colorist in what she described as DC's His Girl Friday, along with doing other odd jobs. She had originally applied to Disney in New York City, but was told that they didn't hire women, which shocked her after the more progressive treatment she got at EC. Reportedly, she was led into a room filled with white man drawing as proof, and Severin didn't want to work there anyway after he saw the place. She later went to Marvel in 1955 after EC folded from The Seduction of Innocence being published, only to be cut from the company after a year and a half. Severin would freelance as commercial artist until 1964 when Lee rehired her. In 1966, Marvel had become so popular with comics like Doctor Strange and Spider-Man that Esquire magazine approached the company about a feature. However, none of the artists at Marvel felt in enough for Esquire, so the job went to Severin. Reportedly, Marvel's founder was so impressed with her work in Esquire, he encouraged her to become a regular artist at Marvel. According to Severin, Martin Goodman commented, "Why do you have her in production? You have a drawer." Which led to Stan Lee to ask Severin, "Would you like to draw? I need you. Steve Ditko just left." Severin would replace Bill Everett, who had succeeded Ditko on Doctor Strange, a daunting task considering he was one of the Master's great artistic series, and would also do King Cole, The Submariner, and The Cat, all while inking and coloring other books as well. Later, Severin would work on Marvel comic book adaptations of The Muppet Babies and Fraggle Rock, while also doing the parody series like Crazy and Not Brand Eck. In 1976, she co-created Spider-Woman with Archie Goodwin, designing her original costume in the Marvel Spotlight issue number 32 in February of 1977. Severin would continue to work freelance up until the 2000s when she retired, and even still produced the occasional piece, including to help recolor the EC retrospective books by B. Craigston Comics, which won both the Harvey and Eisner Awards in 2003. These were some of the numerous awards Severin would win throughout her career. Notably, she was inducted to the Walt Eisner Hall of Fame in 2001. She passed away on August 29, 2018, at the age of 89. Of black cartoonists, only three had managed to break the color barrier of the white-owned comic books in the first half of the century, and all were men. However, that doesn't mean that black female cartoonists weren't producing, such as Jackie Orms, who was born on August 1, 1911, in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. She would write and draw throughout high school and was an art director of her yearbook, the Monongahel High School Yearbook, in 1929 and 1930. It was here the first examples of her cartooning work were seen with caricatures of her fellow students and teachers. During this time, Orms wrote to the editor of the Pittsburgh Courier, a then black newspaper published on Sundays, Robert Vaughn. This correspondence led to her first job covering a boxing match, which made Orms a lifelong fan of the sport. Soon she was working for the Courier as a proofreader, editor, and freelance writer, producing articles on everything from police beats and human interest stories. While Orms stated the love of running around town and writing about everything she saw, what she really wanted to do was draw. Thus, Jackie Orms submitted Torchy Brown and Dixie the Harlem to the Courier, first appearing on May 1st of 1937. The strip became so popular it was later syndicated to 14 other black-owned newspapers, and as a result, Jackie Orms became the first black female cartoonist to be nationally syndicated. The story began with the title character, Torchy Brown, leaving her farm in Mississippi to find work at the New York City's famous Cotton Club, encountering romance and danger along the way. The strip ran from April 30th of 1938, likely when Orms' contract ended at the Courier, and when she would later move to Chicago in 1942, where she wrote for the Chicago Defender, at the time one of America's biggest black newspapers. In 1945, she did single-panel strips like Candy, about a black maid, which ran from March 24th to July 21st of 1945. By August of 1945, Orms had returned to the Pittsburgh Courier, where she did Patty Joe and Ginger, a comic about two sisters that took on a social and political commentary. And it would run for 11 years from September 1st, 1945 to September 22nd of 1956. and of whom Patty Joe was manufactured into a doll in 1947 by the Terry Lee Doll Company, becoming the first black American doll with an extensive wardrobe. Despite being popular across all races, Terry Lee didn't renew Orm's contract in 1949, and now the dolls are considered prize collector items. As for Torchy Brown, Jackie Orms had to put the character on hiatus for 10 years. In 1950, Orms returned to the character with Torchy and the Heartbeats, appearing in the pages of the Pittsburgh Courier, which added a new 8-page comic insert on August 19, 1950. This time, Torchy was adventuring in the jungles of Brazil in the middle of the hurricanes, and would be attached with Torchy's togs, which covered clothes for paper dolls. Unique in the strip was that Torchy also addressed issues of racism, sexism, and even ecological issues, particularly in the strip in which Torchy and her doctor boyfriend confronted the topics on September 18, 1954. Orms would eventually retire from cartooning in 1956, but would continue to produce Merles and Still Lifes until her death on December 26, 1985. Posthumously, Jackie Orms was inducted into the National Association of Black Journalists Hall of Fame in 2014 and into the Will Eisner Hall of Fame in 2018. Another black female cartoonist was also Dolores McCleary, who did Firewall Freddy for Help, a black humor magazine in the 1950s. Of course, not all the heroines in comics were reporters, detectives, or adventurers, such as Tessie the typist and Nellie the nurse, which had the title characters in more traditional female jobs. In the late 1940s, Dorothy Bond syndicated Chlorine, a strip about secretaries. And Nicola did Sally, which ran in the trade publication Fabrics with the intention of advertising the products. Margie Henderson's Little Lulu sold Kleenex in the Sunday section, of course, of national newspapers. Amelia O'Dowd Jones did The Sunday Sun, which appeared in the New York City subway system from 1935 to 1966. They were originally drawn by Fred Cooper, designed to stress good subway manners, before his assistant, O'Dowd Jones, took over, signing her work Opie. Jones was also created Reddy Kilowatt and is credited with introducing the term litterbug from her Sunday Sun strip on 1946. Nobody loves a litterbug, turning the then common term jitterbug on its ear. Ironically, as with many female cartoons who use a gender-neutral name, Opie would be called out in newspapers for the Sunday strip's depiction of women jabbing strangers with umbrellas or clunking their heads with handbags. Ramona Fraiden was born on October 1, 1926, growing up in the outskirts of New York City. She began her art career after graduating from the Parsons School of Design and marrying her husband, New Yorker cartoonist Dana Fraiden, who encouraged her to try cartooning herself. Her husband's friend, letterer George Ward, and Ramona provided some samples to present to studios, which ultimately led to her to land a job at DC Comics with A Shiny Night Story. Soon, she did Aquaman for DC and Adventure Comics, continuing for 10 years, during which time she co-created the character Aqualad with writer Robert Bernstein in the Adventure Comics numbers 269 on February of 1960. After her time in Aquaman, she would co-create the character Metamorpho with writer Bob Haney in The Brave and the Bold number 57 on January of 1965. 2 issues later, in issue number 59, in April-May of 1965, Fraiden drew the Batman-Green Lantern team-up, which was the first time in the series that Batman teamed up with another superhero, later to become the series' hallmark. However, Fraiden would take a 7-year absence in 1965 to raise her daughter, before returning to DC in 1972 to work on Superman, Batman, and Plastic Man. She would later work on the strip Brenda Starr in 1980 from Dale Niznik when she retired, continuing the series to her own retirement in 1955. Fraiden would later admit that she never was interested in superheroes, despite her brilliant work in them. Despite being retired, Fraiden, like many artists, still finds time to work now and again, such as contributing to the SpongeBob comics in 1999. In 2006, Ramona Fraiden was elected to the Will Eisner Hall of Fame. After the public of Frederick Wolverine's Seduction of the Innocent in 1954, the industry imposed the Comics Code Authority to regulate its content to prevent the government from doing so. However, this self-censorship led to the contraction of the industry, and the first artists who were fired were women, with many female-oriented books, particularly the romance genre, being phased out. Like many artists during this time, women would find a new venue in underground comics. Lee Mars was born on September 5, 1945, and would later graduate from the American University with a degree in fine arts. While at school, she was introduced to comic strip artist Tex Blexdale through his daughter, and would soon be working on Little Orphan Annie, Prince Valiant, and High and Lois as his assistant. Mars later formed the Alternative Feature Services, AFS, with the intention of providing feature stories to college and underground newspapers. She would later work with Trina Robbins, who introduced her to the underground comics genre, along with Shelley Sampson, Bully, and Suzanne Laxer, Sousa, meeting in San Francisco in 1969. The company would last for 6 years, while Mars would be the regular contributor to numerous underground comics, notably women's comics, since its founding in 1972, with stories addressing homosexuality and women's rights. Mars would also contribute such stories to Heavy Metal and Epic Illustrated. In 1973, Mars produced the first of three-part story, The Further Fattening of the Adventures of Pudge, Girl Blimp, a story about an overweight 17-year-old girl who hitchhikes to San Francisco to lose her virginity. It would take till 1977 for the last part to be released, and Mars would later collect the whole series in Pudge, Girl Blimp in 2016, which would lead to an Eisner Award nomination. Despite her career in comics, Lee Mars also found work at both Marvel and DC, mostly as a writer, contributing stories to Wonder Woman, House of Secrets, and Crazy. Lee Mars also runs the Lee Mars Artwork, a digital design and animation company that has provided work for Disney, ABC, Time Warner, and MTV, among others, and previously won an Emmy for her animation work on the documentary covering the 1968 Baltimore riots, while also winning the Inkpot Award in 1982. All this while still being a feminist alternative voice in American comic books. It Ain't Me, Babe will be California's first underground feminist newspaper in 1970, which soon produced It Ain't Me, Babe comics, the first all-women comic book produced by Trina Robbins and Barbara Willie Mendez under Last Gasp. While only one issue, the 36-page comic would eventually sell 40,000 copies after three printings, inspiring further magazines. Soon, it would include Julie Wood, who signed Julie's Ghoulies in the comic All Girl Thrills in 1970. Another comic was Tits and Clits, which was by Joyce Farmer and Lynn Shively, Chin Lively, with Nanny Goat Productions, which chose to be more vulgar than high class, running from July of 1972 to November of 1987 for seven issues. It would beat women's comics by 2 months, and which would lead to Women's Comics 1972, formed by Trina Robbins. The annual magazine would run for 17 issues in 1992, featuring many of its creators from It Ain't Me, Babe. In 1974, Roberta Gregory would be the first published lesbian cartoonist in Women's Comics, though Willie Mendez would quit the magazine in 1972. In 1992, Women's Comics officially removed Men from its title with issue number 17, but also be the end of the comics, as most comics, as many female-centric comics have become more widely available, having one of the originals fall to the competition. Choices in Stripes, Aid USA, was made for charities, and was also noted for being the first pro-choice comic, while later a benefit for the Shanty Project. Holly K. Turtle and Mimi Palm published comics in 17 Magazine. Palm in particular had a successful career in Hollywood, working as a writer on TV, notably on The Simpsons, with his first full-length episode, Simpsons Roasting on the Open Fire, which ended up being nominated for 2 Emmys. However, she wasn't made a member of the regular writing team when the show was picked up by Fox, allegedly because the showrunner didn't want a female writer on the staff. Palm would later write 2 graphic novels, Over Easy and The Customer is Always Right, which mainly dealt with her life as a waitress. Both volumes were highly acclaimed. Wendy Penny and her husband Richard ran to Warp Graphics, which published their comic ElfQuest, a fantasy series that first appeared in 1978, focusing on a community of elves struggling to survive in a fantasy world with 2 moons. They were also the first publishers of Colleen Dorin's A Distant Soil, which Dorin created at age 12, which went on to be published by Area Press, while Dorin also went on to draw for Marvel and DC. Dorin began her comic book career quite early, winning a contest at the Walt Disney Company at age 5. She later attended the Christopher Newport University and the Art Institute of Pittsburgh before breaking into the comics scene as a teenager when Tom Long, the owner of the fanzine Graphic Showcase, recruited her to draw his revival of Miss Fury. However, Dorin quit the assignment over his adult content. She later contributed to other fanzines such as Land's Lantern and A Distant Soil, about a young woman who is the heir to an alien religious dynasty, would be published through those as well as through Warp when they picked it up for 9 issues. However, Dorin would leave Warp over a contract dispute, which is why the art for those issues had never been republished, and also leading her to redraw the entire series to be publishing under under the Donning Company before Dorin self-published The Distant Soil herself. It has since been published by Image Comics in 1996, and it sold 700,000 copies through multiple printings. Doran has also found work with Marvel and DC, providing art and covers for such works as The Sandman and The Shield. Colleen Doran continues to be a successful writer-artist today and is considered by many one of the top female creators in her field. In 1985, Eclipse published Women in the Comics, the first book about women in the comic book industry, written by Trina Robbins and Eclipse editor Kat Ironwood. Ironwood was born Catherine Anna Manfred on May 12, 1947. A college dropout, she began writing in her teens, contributing to the science fiction magazines in the 1960s, along with astrology columns for the underground San Francisco Express Times and record reviews for the Rolling Stone. In 1969, she and her then-partner, Peter Paskin, created the surname Ironwood, which became her signature ever since. In 1977, Ironwood would create the Magico Religious Index to Doctor Strange, called the Lesser Book of Vizanti, which she would publish through the small press and later post on her website. This book has become so popular that current Doctor Strange writers consult it. In 1980, Ironwood began work at Ken Pierce Books, editing and writing introductions to a line of comic strip reprints, which included Lee Falk's The Phantom and Mickey Spillane's Mike Hammer. That same year, she succeeded Murray Bischoff as the news reporter for the Comic Buyer's Guide, beginning the long-running Fit the Print column, which presented industry news, reviews, and opinion pieces. This also led to her editing The Art of Will Eisner for Kitchen Sinks Press, along with numerous other freelance projects for the company. In 1983, she became the editor-in-chief of Eclipse Enterprises, and under her, the company published such works as The Miracle Man by Alan Moore and The Rocketeer by Dan Stevens. That same year, Kat Ironwood was awarded the Ink Pot for her lifetime contributions to comic books. During the 1980s, Ironwood had Eclipse create a line of non-traditional trading cards focusing on such subjects as the Iran-Contra scandal and the Kennedy assassination. However, in 1993, Ironwood would divorce Eclipse's owner, Dean Mullaney, leading her to leave Eclipse and join Claypole Comics, handing production and distribution on such comics as DNA Agents and Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, and would stay with the company until it ended in 2007. Today, Ironwood lives in Forestville, California, with her husband since 2000, Nagase Brian W. Ironwood. Ironwood's Women in Comics co-writer Trina Robbins was born on August 17, 1938, in Brooklyn, New York. During the 1950s and 60s, she was an active member of the science fiction fandom, and her art even appeared in the Hugo-winning fanzine Habuka. Her first comics work appeared in the East Village Other, an underground New York paper, along with the underground comics Gothic Blimp Works. In 1969, she designed the costume for the classic Vampirella character for Warren Publishing, which Frank Frazetta drew on Vampira No. 1 on September of 1969. In 1970, she moved to San Francisco, where she co-founded Innate Me Babe with Barbara Mendez. This, of course, led to women's comics, which she contributed to, notably the story Sandy Comes Out, the first comic book story ever to featuring an openly gay lesbian. In the 1980s, Trina Robbins created the adaptations of Sax Rohmer's Dope and Tennant Flea's The Silver Metal Lover, and did the short-lived series Misty for Marvel. The latter was an attempt to revive the Marvel's classic character, Millie the Model, this time now running her own fashion agency while dealing with her niece, Misty. She then made history when she was hired as the first female artist for Wonder Woman in 1986, with The Legend of Wonder Woman with Kurt Busiek writing. Mindy Newell did the revamp for the DC's post-Crisis of Infinite Earths, and in 1989, DC produced a Wonder Woman annual special that was illustrated by 10 different female cartoonists. After the annual, Symphony Martin drew one special issue, and then the book was taken over by Jill Thompson, who became Wonder Woman's regular artist in 1992. Today, Trina Robbins remains an activist in promoting women's issues in and through comics, which is founding the Friends of Lulu, an organization dedicated to promoting women's participation in and in the making of comic books, while also the writer of the comic strip Adventures of Honey West, one of the first popular female detectives. Of course, she is also a noted comic book historian whose books are a main source for these episodes. Dina Lobert was born on September 30th, 1951, and she was originally the co-publisher of the Aardvark Van Helm with her husband, Dave Sim, when she met him in 1976 and later married on October 6, 1978. Through this, she published the first 77 issues of Cerebus from 1977 to 1985. However, after the divorce in 1984, Renegade Press was founded by Dina Lobert, the only woman publisher in comic books at the time, which would publish women's comics and Renegade Romance for 2 years, along with The Flaming Carrot, Miss Tree, and Normal Man. The company went defunct in 1989. In 1987, she won the Ink Pot Award, and in 2010, she was inducted into the Canadian Hall of Fame. Pogo, the classic comic strip using animals to reflect on human nature, would later be drawn by the creator Walt Kelly's daughter, Caroline, in an attempt to revive the strip. Her father and Pogo's creator had passed away in 1970. However, interest in the strip quickly waned, and the last strip appeared on October 2, 1993. Caffey was produced by Kathy Goosewit, who was born on September 5, 1950. She was originally followed her father's vocation of advertising, even reaching to vice president of her firm in 1976. Despite her career success, she would draw funny pictures as an emotional coping mechanism and send them to her parents. Her mother was so impressed by them that she encouraged her daughter to send them to a publisher. Goosewit would finally assent, claiming she only did it to get her mother off her back. She never expected Caffey to be picked up, let alone appear in up to 1,400 papers at its height, leading her to quit her advertising firm to work on Caffey full-time. This first strip appeared on November 22, 1976, and was a semi-autobiographical comic in nature, following the life of Caffey, a single woman dealing with the four guilts of life: food, love, family, and work. Much of it was balancing Caffey and being both a traditionalist and a feminist, especially in conflicts with her mother, who constantly wants her to get married. Sometimes politics were addressed head-on, such as when the series did strips during the 1988 presidential election about the problems of a working woman during the Reagan administration, which did lead to some papers canceling the strip. The comic strip soon became one of the most popular of the time, with the 1987 animated special that won Kathy Goosewit an Emmy for Outstanding Animation Special, and inspiring the 1990 sitcom Caroline in the City, of which the title character has a rivalry with the Kathy strip. The strip ultimately ended on October 3, 2010, when Kathy Goosewit decided to retire, and the comic's end, Kathy is married and expecting her first child. Goosewit would win the Reuben Award from the National Cartoonist Society in 1992 for her work on Caffey. Lynn Johnson was born on May 28, 1947, later attending the Vancouver School of Art with hopes of becoming an artist. She briefly worked in animation, such as uncredited work on cell animation for the Abbott and Costello cartoon show, and she later went to work as a medical artist at the McMaster University, which still keeps her illustrations in storage, such as her father's smoking in the waiting room. When Johnstone was pregnant with her first child, she would draw single-panel cartoons for the ceiling of her obstetrician. These drawings led to her first book, David We're Pregnant, which was published in 1973 under the pseudonym Lynn Franks. The book would ultimately sell 300,000 copies and launch Johnstone's career, though the publisher refused to pay her for the first, thus forcing Johnstone to repurchase the rights for $25,000, from which she would be republished under Lynn Johnstone. Johnstone would later divorce her first husband and start freelancing out of a greenhouse converted into a studio, where she produced a sequel to her first book, Hi Mom, Hi Dad, which was published in 1975. She then met dental student Rod Johnstone, and the two were later married. In 1978, they relocated with their two children to Lynn Lake, Manitoba, where Johnstone was approached by the Universal Press Syndicate about creating a comic strip. Lynn produced 20 strips of the Johnstones, basing on her own family, as in her words, "We are the only people I could draw with consistency." To her surprise, the syndicate approved the strip and offered Johnstone a 20-year contract. After a six-month workup, Johnstone's first strip appeared on September 9, 1979, entitled For Better or Worse. Starring the Pattersons, father and mother, John and Ellie, with kids Michael and Elizabeth, they were a normal family based on Johnstone's own, with the father, John, being a dentist like her husband. It was told in real time as the characters would grow up and change with the years, and with the kids going from preschoolers to adults after the comic's 25-year run. The series would deal with numerous issues, from domestic abuse, moving to new towns, and even homosexuality. The last caused the strip to face problems when she introduced homosexuality in the strip on March of 1993, when Michael's best friend Lawrence came out, leading to 20 newspapers canceling it. However, also led to For Better or For Worse being a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize in 1994 for handling such a sensitive topic. Throughout her career, Johnstone enjoyed a close friendship and mentorship from the great Charles Schulz, the creator of Peanuts, and when she told him she was planning to kill the Patterson's dog, Farley, Schulz objected and even jokingly threatened to kill Snoopy in his own strip. Ultimately, Johnstone would have Farley die, saving April, the Patterson's youngest child, from drowning, but it kept it a secret from Schulz. She later wrote one of the introductions to one of the Fantagraphics collections of Peanuts strip in a book. On August 31st, 2008, Lynn Johnston retired for better or for worse, though the strip is now continued in reruns since July 11th of 2010. Johnston herself would win numerous awards for her strip, notably being the first woman and Canadian to win the Reuben for the National Cartoon Society in 1985. And that is a rambling and too brief history of women cartoonists. It doesn't cover nearly everything, notably more of the more modern creators like Gail Simone or the numerous artists from overseas. Many of the manga artists, such as creators of Rama One Half and Sailor Moon, sales rival the top male artists. Hopefully, we will get to them in the future and possibly turn to one or more of these artists featured in these episodes. If nothing else, I hope these episodes have demonstrated that, like all professions, comic books are not just a man's game, and the female creators have contributed just as much to this great medium. I would like to thank the main source for these episodes, A Century of Women Cartoonists by Trina Robbins, who of course is one of the cartoonists featured in these episodes. A great read for anyone interested in the history of women cartoonists in America.
Changing up our presentation while keeping the candidness that you enjoy. We'll cover all your favorite shows and movies with maybe a few surprises along the way. And you, yes you, will have opportunities to be on our show on a regular basis. That's right, you've got the Zoom Pro account and we're going to use it. So be ready. Find us at nerdblisspodcast.com and esonetwork.com and on all the socials at nerdblisspod. Nerdbliss, listen up.
And now it is March 21st, 2024, time for the favorite comic of the week. Cobra Commander, number 3, by Joshua Williamson and Andrea Milana, which continues the story of Cobra Commander searching for a new energy source to help Cobra Law, only to be captured by the Dreadnoughts, who had achieved to torture him, only for him to turn the tables on him. This is a great read by Williamson, who really shows how Cobra Commander is not really a physical threat, but he is an intellectual one. That's a few words he managed to turn the Dreadnoughts on each other, even despite the pretty horrific things they're doing to him. And it's masked by Milani's art, which is just gorgeous, has a nice gritty style, and doesn't shy away from what they're doing to Cobra Commander. He was put to the ringer, and what they do to his mask is iconic. Very cool and very creepy. And of course, a lot of great nods to the as another classic character makes his appearance, although he's technically been here the whole time, but he finally shows, you finally see him in full bloom. And let me just say, if you're a fan of G.I. Joe, the movie, which I am, which, by the way, the more sci-fi angle that movie takes fits into the larger Energon universe, which this is a part of, because this is a series where the G.I. Joe and Transformers exist in the same universe, which, by the way, also, if you're fans, the thing Cobra Cameron's looking for, you'll instantly recognize it and go, oh, there we go. So yeah, just a lot of fun, a grittier take of the G.I. Joe Energon universe, great read in general, and also great showcase for Cobra Commander, who, in the cartoon, basically, he was a bit whiny, but in this series, you get why he's the leader of Cobra. Very cool, very, very creepy, and a lot of fun. And with that, we'll now conclude with this old archive edition of the History of Female Creators in American Comic Books. Join me again next week for one more archive edition, probably for highlighting a female creator, of course, in line with March, which is Women's History Month. And until then, go enjoy yourself with a comic book, and definitely check out Cobra Commander and the Energon Universe in general. That's been one of the best new reads in general in comics right now.